Hello and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. Now, the program notes I'm reading today are for the concert by the North Carolina Symphony at 7:30 p.m. Sunday, February 9th at the Wilson Center, Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington. This performance will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The program for this performance will include the following. The symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Overture on Hebrew Themes, Opus 34b, by Sergei Prokofiev, and that will be followed by The Simple Symphony, Opus 4, by Benjamin Britten. Then, following the intermission, the symphony returns to perform the Symphony No. 5 in E minor, Opus 64, by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Now I'll begin our reading of symphony notes. The concert begins with the Overture on Hebrew Themes by Sergei Prokofiev. Prokofiev was born April 23, 1891, in Sonskova, Russia, and he died March 5, 1953, in Moscow. This work was composed for clarinet, string quartet, and piano in 1919, orchestrated in 1934. The first performance was January 26, 1920, in New York City by the Zemro Ensemble. The orchestral arrangement premiered in 1935 in Prague, conducted by Nikolai Malko. Now here is the story. In 1919, Sergei Prokofiev was in the United States, busy finishing The Love for Three Oranges for the Chicago Opera. He submitted the complete score on October 1st and then went to spend some time in New York City. Among his first callers were six of his former fellow students from the St. Petersburg Conservatory, who had formed a chamber ensemble called Zimro and traveled to the United States to raise funds for a school of music in Jerusalem with their performances. Zimro, singing in Hebrew, comprising clarinet, string quartet, and piano, performed works by Jewish composers and on Jewish themes for various small groupings within their complement of instruments. But they wanted a new work that would use the entire sextet. The members approached Prokofiev with a notebook full of folk and traditional Jewish tunes and the request to compose a piece on some of those melodies. Well, out of politeness to his old friends, he kept the notebook. One evening, shortly thereafter, he took out the collection and began to improvise accompaniments to some of the tunes. Intrigued by their phraseology and melodic tunings, he conceived a brief piece built from them and sketched out the Overture on Hebrew Themes in 2 days. Now here's some listening tips. The Overture on Hebrew Themes consists of two large musical paragraphs played twice. The first section is based on an atmospheric tune intoned by the clarinet above an infectious accompaniment. The overture's second portion uses a melody broad in structure and hymnal in content. The two sections are repeated before this fascinating piece is brought to a close by a handful of punctuating chords. This work was scored for two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, percussion, piano, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs A Simple Symphony, Opus 4, by Benjamin Britten. Britten was born November 22, 1913, in Lowestoft, England. He died December 4, 1976, in Aldeburgh. The work was composed in 1934, the first performance, March 6, 1934, in Norwich, by an amateur orchestra, Britten conducting. Now here's the story. While still a toddler, Benjamin Britten showed exceptional musical promise, starting to compose and improvise at the piano at a very early age. By age 12, he had already composed six string quartets, 10 piano sonatas, and numerous suites of piano pieces and songs. Although his dentist father was not enthusiastic about his son's passion for the field, that might not yield a decent living, he thought. His mother was Benjamin's emotional lodestar. So convinced was she of her son's talents that she openly expected his name to join the musical trinity, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, as the fourth B. While Britten did not quite fulfill his mother's fantasy, he is unquestionably the single most important British composer of the 20th century. The Simple Symphony, composed in 1934, utilizes some of the early, facile but original compositions written before he was 13. In a preface to the score, Britten wrote that although the development of these themes is in many cases quite new, there are large sketches of the work that are taken bodily from the early pieces, only here rescored for string orchestra. While adhering primarily to lyrical melodies and tonal harmonies, Britten makes some changes to the conventions of classical form, rendering the symphony not quite as simple as the playful alliterative movement titles suggest. Now here are some listening tips. On the first movement, the symphony begins in counterpoint with different melodic voices layered on top of one another. The contrasting second theme is more folksy. In the second movement, this scherzo and trio is played entirely pizzicato, plucking the strings. During the trio, Britten uses occasional choppy staccato, bowing in the lower instruments. The third movement, the slow movement, is in sharp contrast a series of themes. The main melody is melancholy, and the final coda develops this theme further. And the fourth movement, the frolicsome finale, is in a formal rondo form with a repeated refrain that alternates with new music, including a development of the refrain. And this work is scored for strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 5 in E minor, Opus 64, by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Tchaikovsky was born May 7, 1840, in Votkinsk, Russia. He died November 6, 1893, in St. Petersburg. The work was composed in 1888, and the first performance was November 17th of that year, 1888, in St. Petersburg, and it was conducted by the composer. Here is the story. Tchaikovsky was never able to maintain his self-confidence for long. More than once, his opinion of a work fluctuated between the extremes of satisfaction and denigration. The unjustly neglected Manfred Symphony of 1885, for example, left his pen as the best I have ever written, he said. But the work failed to make a good impression at its premiere, and Tchaikovsky's estimation of it tumbled. The score's failure left him with the gnawing worry that he might be written out, and that 3 years after Manfred were devoid of creative work. It was not until May 1888 that Tchaikovsky again started collecting little by little material for a symphony. He wrote to his brother Modest. He worked doggedly on the new symphony, ignoring illness, the premature encroachment of old age. He was only 48 at the time, but he suffered from continual exhaustion and loss of vision, and his doubts about himself as well. He pressed on, and when the Fifth Symphony was completed at the end of August, he said, "I have not blundered. It has turned out well." Though the Fifth Symphony was applauded at its premiere in St. Petersburg, Tchaikovsky felt that it was a failure. Modest was convinced that any negative reaction to the Fifth Symphony, and the critics had some, could be traced to an inadequate performance, but the composer could not be persuaded of the work's value until a performance in Hamburg early in 1889, when musicians, critics, and audience alike received it enthusiastically. Even the venerable Johannes Brahms, who was not strongly drawn to the music of his Russian colleague, made a special effort to attend the performance on a visit to his hometown. Tchaikovsky was buoyed by his reception in Hamburg, and his estimation of the Fifth Symphony and of himself shot up once again. The structure of the Fifth Symphony progresses from minor to major, from darkness to light, from melancholy to joy, or at least to acceptance and stoic resignation. Now here's some listening tips. For the first movement, all four movements of this symphony are linked by a recurring fate theme, given first by clarinets as the brooding introduction to the first movement. The sonata form starts with a melancholy melody intoned by bassoon and clarinet, a romantic theme for the strings, an aggressive dialogue between winds and strings, and a languorous string melody round out the exposition. After the development section, the solo bassoon ushers in the recapitulation of the earlier musical material. The second movement, the Andante, calls to mind an operatic love scene. Twice an imperious theme intrudes upon the starlit mood of this romanza. The third movement, a flowing waltz melody, dominates much of the third movement. The central trio exhibits a scurrying figure in the strings. Quietly and briefly, the fate motto returns in the movement's closing pages. And the fourth movement, the finale, begins with a long introduction based on the fate theme cast in a heroic mood. A vigorous exposition, a concentrated development section, and an intense recapitulation follow. The closing coda uses the fate motto in a victorious major key. This work was scored for three flutes, one doubling the piccolo, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Dr. Richard E. Rota. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I will be reading all of the program notes from the Classical Music Concert Series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.